We are back for episode 324. Joe, how you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Wonderful on this blessed Thanksgiving weekend. I guess we could take pause and be thankful for what we have and ways we can preserve
Yeah, particularly ways we can preserve it. That's a
it. This week, a couple of stories, but before we get into this Osama bin Laden letter to America, we'll talk about a lot of angles you can approach that. But just a couple of nights ago, I think it was on the night of the 22nd in Ireland, there was a, yeah, it was, I was well, it's reported as a Thanksgiving Day attack. I think it's the American press. I don't think it's Thanksgiving in Ireland. There was an immigrant from North Africa, I think Algeria, who stabbed a woman and three children outside an elementary school in the inner city of Dublin. The woman, one of the children, a 5-year-old, are in serious condition in the hospital. There are two other children, aged 5 and 6, who reportedly have less serious injuries, thankfully. Now, when the news leaked, this apparently sparked mostly peaceful protest. They're calling it, in this case, they're calling it a riot. There have been major riots reported throughout Ireland. A hotel housing illegal aliens has been burned. It's telling, as well as a tram, a double-decker bus, and a police car. Well, if that's the scope of it, that's really mild compared to like Black Lives Matter. I think the Black Lives Matter riots in Ireland were more destructive.
Right,
Another
that's actually true.
telling that the natives are getting restless, and these are of course ethnic whites, I ethnic Ireland, Irish rather, and it's, of course, this is a reaction to of course the stabbing, the violence, which is all too common in Ireland, throughout the EU, throughout the West, with mass immigration from some of these, shall we say, more savage states, more violent, a lot of foreigners coming in. Of course, this has been aided and abetted by the state. The Irish government's response, I believe Ireland is governed by a half Indian homosexual. So Ireland is officially globalist. I think Ireland is slated to be minority white Irish by as early as 2030 if current trends continue. So Ireland, I think only five, little over 5 million of them there. So it's very easy to inundate and change that country. And they've been doing that. But nevertheless, the Irish government, in response to the riots, came out and promised more hate speech laws. Keith Woods tweeted, "The government is more concerned about natives expressing, quote, hate than they are about migrants stabbing children on the street. So more laws are being sent, or more laws to silence Irish people. This is a state of war with this nation." So basically, the way you address the pandemic of violence brought on by mass immigration to Ireland is to keep people from talking about it. And of course, we had the election. Was the Netherlands? Was it the Kurt Wilders was elected prime minister. His party got 24% of the vote, which is sort of an anti-immigration party. So there's sort of an indication that the people are very unhappy with the current state of affairs, but the governments are resolute in maintaining current immigration policies and changing the complexion of Europe for the purposes of diversity, as Barbara Leonard Spector boasted of doing so many years ago. So what say you?
Well, the policy of the EU bureaucrats is to destroy the European. I just don't know how clear the facts on the grounds could be, right? I mean, immigration is demanded of all of the EU participants, and immigration is always destructive. It leads to higher rates of crime, and obviously it dilutes the native population that was supposed to be protected by these EU policies. So something is going on. There is some hidden agenda, obviously, that the EU represents, and I don't think that any sort of coherent response can be generated until the people are absolutely certain that, the EU bureaucrats were carefully selected by the oligarchs and represent a secret society. And I would say the one act that could help the European understand what they're up against would just be DNA testing of the entire clump of EU bureaucrats and see just how many of them are from converso families and how many are actually ethnic Europeans. Because my guess would be, Tim, that the vast majority would be handpicked converso families that had lived inside these ethnic populations and have been carefully groomed to become the ruling class and then usher in a destructive policy of immigration and then also promote destruction vis-a-vis foods, chemicals, everything that has led to a 60% decline in sperm. Birth rates are collapsing, and basically you're in this kind of soft genocide of, soft at some points, of the European, the EU bureaucrat. I think if you really got right down to it, you'd find the ruling elite in that clump would have taken oaths, sort of Freemason type oaths, for this very act to destroy and exterminate the Europeans. They're obviously being replaced. I mean, you can, have opinions about my understanding, but you certainly can't argue against the fact that the Europeans are being, dissolved and exterminated because just the immigration policy alone is, as you pointed out, is bringing an end to the native European. So this is the world that the European lives in, and what, I think keeps the rebellion in check is just the fact that there isn't that that demand to really see who these people are that are running Europe.
Yeah, I guess you can see one way to reduce the population is to invite savage people from the third world and have them stab to death women and children outside schools.
Yeah, that'll work just in a small scale.
I think apparently this school was a Gaelic language school in Dublin, which is telling, meaning there was an Irish nationalist. So one would suspect this might have been targeted. But you kind of alluded to it is we have supposedly have popular government in the West. That's its sort of raison d'être, reason of being, legitimacy. We hear a lot about democracy, protecting our democracy, but if anything, that means that the government reflects the will or the values and sentiments and desires of the people. And in matters of things like immigration, we know that's actually it's the exact opposite. It's all polling indicates literally 80 to 90% support for either tightening or shutting down immigration altogether. But the state is dedicated to promoting it in all these EU countries and even the United States. Even when the laws are on the books, you have officials like Alejandro Mayorkas at the Department of Homeland Security undermining the law, doing the bidding of his tribe. And that's the problem. You have this sort of this deep state bureaucratic managerial state. Laws are in place. These are immigration laws, or even if the laws are not being enforced, they can administratively ignore them, choose not to enforce them, don't appropriate the funds. All these things they can do, bureaucratic sort of legitimated to undermine the sovereignty of the state if those bureaucracies and those agencies are infiltrated by or treasonous individuals, which evidently they
Sure.
are.
And then just take this specific, instance where you have this Algerian individual who is obviously mentally ill and filled with hate and stabbed a bunch of kids. And then it was finally stopped by, of all things, another immigrant, which kind of shows you the racial composition of, these areas. But just ask yourself, well, why was he allowed into the country? What was the, and I'm not talking about his the actual reality. I'm just talking about the PR. What was the rationale? What was he bringing to Ireland in the fantasy case, in the best case?
Yeah, why
What
isn't an Algerian living in
skills,
Algeria?
what skills did he have that were needed? What language skills did he have? Why was he a candidate to come to a European country and habitate there? What was so they're really, when you ask these kind of questions, you'll find that there wasn't any. There's absolutely no rationale whatsoever. He was brought in within an immigration wave, a clump, which is justified primarily on the idea of that it is hate to resist. I mean, this is kind of the bizarre rationale that's given when people ask for an explanation or what is in back of it. They're told that, well, you have to check your hate. It's hatred, or it's resistance to multiculturalism because of your racism, your white supremacy, that otherwise you would just see this as there isn't any issue whatsoever. Even though the countries are getting poorer, the ethnicities are being dissolved, the violence is up, and you would think, well, these are just the normal things that should be asked at this point. But what is the response? Well, it's just the propaganda and the mind control. So I'm glad that the Irish did resist in this instance, and they had a pretty spicy response. They need to, transition that into political action. There is no way that the Irish people, to use an expression, can exist in the future if they don't rebel.
With this current government, with this current government in place.
They have to understand that this government, they have to expose it. They have to say, look, this government is not representing the Irish people. This government is here to exterminate the Irish people. They have to make
They need a counter coup. There's already been a coup. Sorry if.
And they have to bring it about with urgency and with the under the auspice of self-defense. I mean, I don't know what they aren't justified in doing at this point. I mean, the attacks against them couldn't be more clear-cut and overt. I mean, people have the right of self-defense. So, I'm glad that the Irish are resisting.
Again, why is there a hotel filled with immigrants that the tax Irish taxpayers are paying for at the same time as a housing crisis in Ireland for Native Irish? Why is that? What's the rationale for that?
And there was a, just as an example, if you saw the videos, the Irish kind of young men worked to prevent the fire brigades from putting out the fire at the one of the immigrant hotels, And so this is where we're at. It's the EU bureaucrats have created a race war inside of Ireland. And it's part of their plan to destroy the country in every which way, because all of these things, like something like even the riots, the burning, the violence, the pecuniary violence, because it's just a few people, but all of them work to debase the culture. It just makes the country more
Well,
unpleasant and unproductive. And
there
all
will.
of this works to create the third world clump that they have in mind for the European countries.
The media will report this incident as a riot in Ireland. It will go global with news, but no one reports the everyday street violence that the Irish must endure because they've been enriched. That didn't exist, 10, 15 years ago in Ireland or 20
Course
years
not.
ago. And it's so the mundane crime that occurs, the general decline of the quality of life, of lower trust societies, the loss of public spaces and the loss of culture, that doesn't get reported, even though that's doing far more damage in totality than this one incident to property and lives. And again, the lack of law enforcement and protecting people's lives, it's the same story all over the place in Sweden, Germany, Ireland. France had a similar incident this week where there was a music festival party that was being held, a dance or something, and it was a private affair, and it was set upon by people from the suburbs. Now in Paris, I think people from the suburbs, that's where the immigrants have clustered, from what I understand, in the suburb. And it's a little different.
Just
And
to
they stabbed like people in the neck, like it was just reportedly unprovoked. But these are immigrants into France,
you just look at the mind control statements by the bureaucrats, like Drew Harris. He's the head of the Irish police. I mean, I'm just going to assert he's a converso Freemason. I don't even know, but I'm just going to say, hey, he said, well, the violence was a lunatic hooligan faction driven by a far-right ideology, inflamed by
Really?
online misinformation. I mean, the
So
president,
the children weren't stabbed.
right?
Okay.
The president Higgins, he said that the stabbings would be used or abused by groups with an agenda that attacks the principle of social inclusion. See, social inclusion, far-right ideology.
But that inclusion entails people getting stabbed and high rates of crime and the destruction of Irish culture.
Right. And then
so,
and then
so if you're so if you want to preserve Irish culture, maintain public order and safety, you're anti-inclusion. But being anti-inclusion is hate. Therefore Ireland must be destroyed.
Right. Exactly right. And that is the rationale. And this, you know, so it's just at this point, the question is, can the mind control keep the, you know, the bulk of the Irish population from a real rebellion? Justice Minister McGinty, Helen, you know, again, I just will assert her. She can't be this stupid. She has to be representing some kind of fake agenda. She mm-hmm. said, you know, it's a thuggish and manipulative element. You know, that
not the criminal who stabbed the kids.
Not a single word, not one word out of these people talking okay. about the acts of violence against Irish children by immigrants who have no value to the country, that have been brought in by EU policies, which are obviously designed to damage the nation. Not a word, not one word. Yes. They have all kinds of language, and it's very skillfully crafted, right? I mean, this is not a Socratic introduction to, like, let's have an open discussion about this. This is diminishing returns time, where they want to find a way to not have discussion. It is a lunatic hooligan faction driven by far right ideology. Well, gee, that's a good introduction to having an honest and open discussion about you know, the new levels of violence that the immigrants have caused. So this is
there's no outrage in her apartment. She doesn't feel any. He or she? Who was that? Sorry, was it she?
That was a he. That was Drew Harris.
Okay, he feels yeah. no regard. He obviously he doesn't identify with the Irish people.
Of course not. Absolutely not. There is not.
So why is he giving? You want people in government who identify with the people they rule over. Otherwise, what do you have? You have an alien regime.
Identify and also create order and civilization. Yeah. I mean, otherwise, why are they in those roles? Right. Mm-hmm. This guy is a an apologist and a mind control specialist. You know, that is in favor of this wave of immigration, which is basically genociding Irish people and culture.
Yeah, and these societies, I mean, these populations aren't that large.
No, of course
so for
not.
Ireland, 5 million, you know, Finland, 12 million.
Well, what do they need the immigrants for? What do the immigrants bring? What do they bring?
More interesting menus, I guess.
Yeah.
Apparently, you can't import recipes.
No, you can't.
You need the people.
Well, you can't even, like, you know, I mean, they can Uber Eats the food from Algeria if they absolutely have to have it. They don't need to, like, bring these people here. But the fact is, so few of the young men that are coming in are actually working. They can't.
Yeah, I doubt this guy.
The jobs, what they do.
I doubt the assailant owned a restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you actually, and I'm sure a fraction of them do, but obviously the majority of these young men that they're bringing in are just there for the violence and the destruction. They yeah. don't have anything they can do. What job skills that they would they bring to Ireland? Ireland doesn't really have an economy that is creating a whole lot of jobs that would be needed to be done that are outside the general population that already existed. Right? It's yeah. a very static. Charming and was a high trust culture, didn't yeah. need a lot of new jobs.
Yes.
Right. So they don't, there's, you know,
Ireland was wealthy in other ways.
Yeah, it
you
was
know, wealthy in other ways. And it's, you know, how do you measure wealth and happiness and all that? You know, and they, you know, they sold their soul, so to speak, and 25, 30 years ago with the Irish Celtic Tiger and the credit infused boom, which, you know, allowed them to travel a lot more. They lost their identity. So there's a price to that. I mean, it's, I think it's, you know, it's either mammon or, you know, you serve two servants. No, you can't. It's either mammon or God. And they, you know, the Irish were, you know, there's a big long story that happened in Ireland the past, you know, 60 years, this transformation. Really, it's the past 30 years been so fast, but, you know, as things circle the drain, things tend to go faster, you know, so.
You know, one person that actually had a comment that I thought was reasonable and it surprised me, because I thought he was pretty much a controlled individual after his promotion of the vaccine, was Conor McGregor, mm-hmm. The, you know, I mean, unfortunately dimwitted MMA oh, yeah. fighter, you know, I mean, but he actually was honest. He said, you know, he tweeted, he said, innocent children ruthlessly stabbed by a mentally deranged non-national in Dublin today. Our chief of police had this to say on the riots in the aftermath. And then, he quotes what I was saying. And then, Drew, not good enough. There is a grave danger among us, an island that should never be here in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, there is. See, this is the McGregor is getting to the actual point. Should never be here in the first place.
Yes.
That's the articulation of the reality. That's mm-hmm. great.
One other thing that caught my attention was Harvard University again. President, what's her name? Claudine Gay. She's a black lady, of course. Affirmative action. President of Harvard said anti-Semitism has no place here. Unfortunately, neither does freedom of speech. Because, of course, right. Now they define anti-Semitism. Inevitably, if you have freedom of speech, you're going to get a good amount of anti-Semitism as they define it, because it's simply criticism of Jews or how of Jewish organizations. This was done as a reaction to the threat of over 1,600 Jewish alumni threatening to pull their donations. So that shows the Jewish commitment to free speech. Apparently, following enormous backlash against the university over its initial statement about Hamas's October 7th attack on Israel, with critics condemning Harvard President Claudine Gay's statement for failing to explicitly denounce Hamas and lack of response to a controversial joint letter by Harvard student groups in support of Palestine that called Israel entirely responsible for the violence, Harvard has just announced that it will work with its newly established anti-Semitism advisory group to implement anti-Semitism education and training for affiliates. What does it tell you if you have to do that? Any introspection here? I affirm our commitment to protecting all members of our community from harassment and marginalization, and our commitment to meeting anti-Semitism head on with the determination it demands, Gay wrote. Anti-Semitism has no place at Harvard. We're committed to doing hard work to address this scourge. Harvard President Claudine Gay announced plans to implement training around anti-Semitism in a Thursday email. Additionally, in the email, she explicitly condemned the use of the phrase "from the river to the sea," a pro-Palestine slogan that prominent alumni have called eliminationist and anti-Semitic. Our community must understand that phrases such as "from the river to the sea" bear specific historical meaning to a great many people. What is that history? Anyway, imply the eradication of Jews from Israel and engender both pain and existential fears within our Jewish community, Gay wrote. I condemn this phrase and similarly hurtful phrases. So because of Jewish feelings, you don't have the right to free speech on the Harvard campus. One professor, Kirsten Weld, a professor of history, criticized Gay's decision to denounce a specific phrase used by student activists. Can't recall any prior instance of a contested phrase idea receiving official condemnation like this or having any single or specific historical meaning imputed to it in my 11 years on this campus, she wrote on X. The protesters shouted shame at a Jewish student, and that apparently that's an anti-Semitic incident. So here we go. We have these oligarchs like Bill Ackman and former Victoria's Secret CEO and benefactor of Jeffrey Epstein, Leslie Wexner, having already said that if Harvard does not take steps to fix the problem, they could face donor exodus. So you have 1,600 Jewish benefactors of Harvard threatening to pull their money. Now, here's the thing. Philanthropy is the single largest contributor to revenue at Harvard, accounting to 45% of university's $5.8 billion income last year. Philanthropic gifts accounted to 9% of the operating budget, 36% of its $51 billion endowment amassed over decades. Nevertheless, it has a $51 billion endowment, and it's pretty much shutting down free speech for less than $6 billion. It just tells you it's all about money here. They're able to use money. Harvard, it's a $51 billion endowment. Now, here's the thing. The undergraduate student body at Harvard, I looked it up, is about 7,240. Annual tuition is $56,000. This is for undergraduate. So if Harvard were to announce free tuition, it would cost them $405 million a year. Jewish philanthropy is about $5 billion. The endowment, that $405 million, if they just offered free tuition, would account for, if I do my math right, 0.0079% of the endowment. The endowment grows about 2% a year. So literally, they could not charge for people to go to Harvard and have it not put a dent in their endowment. But nevertheless, they're beholden to these Jewish philanthropists for $5 billion. Now, the same thing at Yale. Their endowment is $41 billion. Tuition is $46,000 a year. If they offered free tuition, it would cost $250 million for their 5,400 students, more or less. And that's 0.00661% of the endowment. So, and again, endowments grow about 2 to 3% a year. And what's interesting is Harvard and Yale and most other universities, all the Ivy League, are nonprofit tax-exempt organizations. And they sit upon this huge endowment, which profits every year, and they charge for tuition. At the same time, they're backing down for Jewish philanthropists who just amount to a fraction of the value of the endowment. What does that say about power? Now, I suspect this also speaks that if Harvard didn't back down, that Jewish finance could also put a dent in the endowment, which is not being spoken here. But I thought those are interesting numbers. Why are these universities tax exempt if they're charging for tuition, these exorbitant rates for tuition, and they're sitting on these huge endowments raking in the cash? And also, this makes them vulnerable to obviously Jewish control.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, kind of the good news is that Harvard as an academic institution is coming to an end.
Yes.
They've just been a machine that produces oligarchic political control for, 50 years. Mm-hmm. But they had this reputation, which was backed up by the fact that they were able to harvest the best kids. You had to have the highest SAT scores. And so even though the school itself, was crap, and I actually have a relative who teaches there, so I know a little bit about the thing. The standards and the kids have been in steep decline over the last 10 years. And that's really accelerating now. The weight for admission is now the highest component would be if you're the first person in your family to attend a university, you would be, moved to the top of the list. So you can see as an academic institution, they're just collapsing, and obviously they're not going to keep that stature for a whole lot longer, but they are going to be kind of transitioning into just branded political action committees. And why they want to keep the money coming in, as you point out, it's not for tuition or anything to do with education. That is no longer really a serious or primary function of the university. It's for their political activities. Look at the actual way that Harvard, so-called, university, is able to give money to different, political action committees, to special interests, endowing chairs of gender study, so the money is being spent more and more in an overt political and malevolent fashion. That's mm-hmm. that's what the university is. The brand is sort of, Harvard can be compared to Playboy, where at one point, it had a product, but then, as pornography onset, it still had the capacity to sell its brand. And Harvard, that's kind of where Harvard is now.
Yeah.
The academic side of it is just a brand. It's not real. There isn't, any sort of intellectual prowess that's coming out of the institution per se. It's just this political branding process that it involves. And frankly, I think this is good. I think this, it's almost like you can't go wrong here, Tim. If the Jewish oligarchs stop funding it, well, that's great. If they continue to fund it, hopefully that will, be a way to expose the institution as, as just using academic stature as a blind, as a rouge to like be able to then sell both its political products, all this money going into political action committee, and also its individuals. They create people that go into the State Department or whatever, and they have the Harvard University education, mm-hmm. and that is a brand that gives them a little bit of cachet that makes it easier to put them and put these kind of people in position of power. As far as I'm concerned, the institution cannot be exposed and unraveled quickly enough. And it would be great if there was a legitimate Justice Department, that the thing could be attacked as a fictional academic institution at this point, and just be forced to admit that it was a political action committee and be taxed and regulated accordingly.
Yeah, it's a sort of these universities operate sort of these are tax exempt hedge funds.
Yeah,
that was exposed a few years ago when some of the details of sort of the rape of Russia in the 90s, where the Harvard Endowment was a huge beneficiary of that. At the time, Larry Summers was president of Harvard. Yes, a Jew, and they're involved in the embezzlement of real wealth out of Russia when that regime collapsed. And you know, in the early 90s, the Soviet Union collapsed. And this was done through a series of networks of Russian Jews and also Western Jewish oligarchs, leveraging currency manipulations to dollarize the Russian economy and simply rob it of resources. That's why I had the Jewish oligarchs, the Jewish oligarchs show up like in Western Europe buying soccer teams and, you know, building giant yachts and all that at the expense of Russia. And one of the reasons why Putin is so reviled in the West and by Jews is because he appeared to reverse all that and get things under control in Russia and stabilize Russian society and actually reverse the economic and also the population decline that it experienced. Again, Russia, Harvard exposed. And again, if they're not there promoting free inquiry and free speech, then it simply isn't a university anymore, which it hasn't been for a while.
It isn't a university in any sense of the word. Yeah. Because, you know, it's not really promoting Socratic or, you know, developed intellects. You know, it's just producing narrowly focused bureaucrats for, you know, affirmative action and for kind of this narrow you know, woke conscious. That's all it does at this point. There's really nothing else that comes out of it. They have some kind of, you know, academic, well, not academic, but they have some technology they developed. But that's usually in partnership. I mean, what Harvard does is they will have a way of like being partners in a vaccine company or you know, something like this. And that's really what the thing is. And that's how it should be viewed. I'd love to see Harvard lose its, you know, its legal status as a university. That'd be very, very helpful to just have it exposed as a kind of woke business that is there to bring about the same results in America that the EU bureaucrats are doing in Ireland.
Well, it's obvious that if you're at a university and you're endowed and money is supposed to be given to you to explore, you know, whether research or engage in sociological research, writing critical thought and all these things. But if you produce a product or even have an utterance which runs afoul of the immediate desires of the oligarchs, they shut you down.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so you're not giving money so Harvard can be a university. Giving money so you can control the institution, use it for your own purposes.
So, you know, the only actually sort of interesting intellectual productions that Harvard's had that, it, you know, in my adult life were like the Unabomber and Tim Leary.
Yeah. I
mean, what else? I mean, it's just the thing is an absolute rotten cesspool. It's just disgusting. And it would just be a good thing to circulate among particularly middle class parents that you really don't want your kids to enter into this cesspool. It's just not good for them. You know, yeah, they get a certain cachet as far as job applications, but there's ways around that. They should get real training and, you know, really you have to, as a parent, you gotta be more and more into vetting universities.
Yes.
And I mean, and the top universities, so-called, you can just throw all of them in the trash.
Yeah, everything at the top. And I was like, oh, yeah.
They're all a cesspool.
Yeah, what are they sitting atop of?
Just sitting, right. I mean, it's like access into the State Department, you know, basically is what they can provide for you. It's just the idea of like, well, what is a university? You know, the ideas of, you know, training the mind and like a diversity of opinion, you know, like the world of ideas, that's gone. And that's just absolutely ludicrous even to try to talk about those things. It's just, it's dictatorial. It's, you know, you can just see that the woke professors are, how aggressive they are.
Yeah, well, you have a better chance of getting something useful and stimulating at a community college than you were at Harvard. I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, it's just, I mean, just for fun, you know, someone should say, you know, I'd like to create a class here at Harvard for all of the benefits of anti-Semitism.
Well, yeah, when they talk about anti-Semitism, they're like, well, this is kind of that's a rather complex topic. Or even when they talk about
Well,
the White
that's the
House
thing.
commissions, do you invite any non-Jews to talk about it? Is there another side to the
It's the
story? I
most
mean,
complicated, you know, and you have to have a kind of
even when you go to marriage therapy, theoretically, the other party has a right to say something.
yeah, well, you'd think so. But the language would be just like the language of the Irish bureaucrats we were, you know, describing earlier. That's what they have left.
Yeah.
They have the language of woke intimidation and shaming, and this is all that they have. And the whole university has been obviously infected with
Well,
this.
just like when Leonard Jeff, not, it's not Leonard Jeffries, that's his uncle, Hakeem Jeffries,
Yeah.
the minority leader, the House of Representatives, the Democratic minority leader, was at the March for Israel. You know, optics was giving this long list of countries in history that have expelled the Jews. Okay.
Yeah.
Does this give you pause at all? No, it doesn't.
Right. I mean,
Therein lies the
was
problem.
there ever an you know like did this you know ethnicity come in and be very self-centered and work against the general interests of the indigenous population? Yeah,
Yeah.
actually it does from time to time. And can we talk about this honestly and have honest discussions about that? Or are you just going to sit here and lecture me because you know I as a manifestation
It's
of
like,
evil?
Joe, I can't tell you. I've been kicked out of 109 country clubs. What's wrong with
Right.
those country clubs?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, time and time again, kicked out.
yeah.
Never again.
Never again. So, you know, these things cannot bear any scrutiny. And you know, it's kind of interesting. You know, I don't know if just the time is right in our show here, but you know, they had Bin Laden's
Oh yeah, the
letter to America.
controversy with TikTok and Bin Laden's so-called
Yeah.
letter to America.
Yeah, and that was, I thought,
Did
you
you read
know,
actually read the letter?
oh yeah, I've read it.
It's not long,
I
it's like 2 pages, right? So yeah, I
yeah,
read it.
no, and I mean, I would say this is, you know, very clever propaganda. I thought the letter when it came out was very clever propaganda.
It
It,
definitely supports the official narrative of 9/11, right?
well, for sure. And it you know, but it has the key points of kind of intellectual control. You know, it talks about the advantage of Sharia law. You know, he uses the expression white people, you know, and racism. And so what I thought about it coming out in the TikTok production of it is that the anti-Semitic meme was becoming basically something that could be discussed in American social circles, and particularly at the water cooler, I think, at you know, in businesses, because the response against the Gazans was inappropriate, was genocidal, because you know 10,000 people were being destroyed, and they were using high technology weapons against a civilian population. You know, so suddenly the props which keep the concept of anti-Semitism as an element of mind control were starting to erode. People were starting to talk about, well, you know, maybe the Israelis are, well, evil, perhaps. You know, maybe there is something about their behavior that we need to like put into the, you know, public domain for scrutiny.
Maybe our
Um,
government shouldn't have unconditional support for Israel. Just
right.
perhaps.
Exactly. So anyway, so then suddenly this pops up, and you know, you have the idea of a personality rather than analysis. I
Well,
mean,
this is like
Bin
Hitler, right?
Laden,
It's like invoking Hitler, isn't it?
100%, and that's exactly right. So he come, they bring him back. He is the way they control us primarily is through personality, right? They have personalities that have meaning. You know, Churchill is courageous and brave, and Hitler is, maniac and anti-Semitic. And so you bring up the personality, and that short circuits the mind, so you don't have to do any analysis about the issue that the personality is being applied to, even though the idea of Bin Laden having some kind of real impact on the way we should analyze the current situation in Gaza is, well, ridiculous, but nevertheless, here he comes. And so, he talks about, and of course, as is always the case, a lot of the stuff in the letter is correct. And would be the really good basis for discussion. But I think actually the real effect is just the opposite, because now you have, if you're really promoting anti-Semitism by having an honest discussion about the Israeli behavior here, you're just basically, supporting bin Laden. That's what you're doing, So that's how I saw it. I just saw it as a crude propaganda moment. It came out on TikTok. And then, of course, a lot of people who associated with it, I think a lot of people who thought it was actually useful, or believed in the statement, then they started promoting it. TikTok banned it. And there was this publicity. The publicity, I think, was, negative to thought, because you have this idea of bin Laden, the promotion of anti-Semitism. Don't forget about the Twin Towers. Yeah. I mean, so it was a distraction. And, I hope it doesn't last for very long. There's much more important issues that need pressing issues that should be, thought about by Americans right now, particularly the use of high technology weapons of mass destructions against civilians. I mean, mm-hmm. to me, that's, pretty serious topic and something we should be talking about.
Yeah, this one thing is the idea, again, as you said, if you're critical of Israel, not only how it treats the Palestinians, also its inordinate influence in America, evidently, which is clear with in terms of foreign policy, even domestic policy and cultural influence, you are bin Laden. You're a sandal wearing, savage in the cave somewhere. You're a terrorist. And it's
promoting Sharia law.
Yeah, it sounds like if you're anyway taken aback by the Jewish power and its influence, and its negative influence on the culture, it's open. And we know it's because they celebrate some of this negative influence. They call it liberation, whether it's pornography, feminism, abortion, all manner of degeneracy, these things. If you're critical of that, as Hitler and the National Socialists were in Germany in the 1930s of the Weimar corruption that was experienced, you're the same. So wait, is it a valid criticism though? It's not really, it's like, obviously it's a reaction to something. He cites, in the letter you read, he talks about Jewish control of your financing, your foreign policy. All this is true. But now if you point it out, you're like bin Laden. The same time he invokes
they associate Sharia law, you with bin Laden, and by that they're able to exclude all of your thinking. So,
but then he talks about attacking America. This is why it was happening. So it's a blowback thing. Now, blowback's an interesting theory because there's always some validity to it. For every action, there's a reaction. There's consequences for doing things in the world. And a lot of people have good cause to resent the United States because one of the things, because it's a support of Israel the past 75 years, particularly since 1967. And it's come at the expense of the reputation of the United States in the Middle East and throughout the world. That's clear. But now, again, you're like bin Laden if you do this and you're a terrorist. Despite the fact, and he does cite that the United States has no problem supporting terrorism, carrying out terror when it's pursuing its own policies and objectives, and aligning with terrorist organizations and terrorist governments and brutal regimes. One is the regime which his family was a prominent member of, the Saudi regime, and also they were business partners with the Bushes. The bin Laden family were business partners with the Bushes through the Carlyle Group. Yeah, so it gets real murky and complex if you look deeper into it. The letter does support the official 9/11 narrative, but there's some difficulty here because Osama bin Laden consistently denied any responsibility for 9/11. Yeah. So you have this letter. So what's the authenticity of the letter, right? It's there. Apparently, it was an interview. In September 29th, 2001, he had an interview with Amat, a Pakistani daily published in Karachi on September 28th, 2001. This is, of course, 17 days after after the 9/11 attacks. It was translated into English by the BBC World Monitoring Service, made public on the following day. The authenticity of the interview apparently has been verified. It's confirmed. And Osama bin Laden categorically denies his involvement in the 9/11 attacks. Bin Laden's statements in this interview were markedly different from those made on alleged Osama videotapes, which are all, again, very questionable. There's one where he changed his appearance and all that. You had the one, it wasn't him. CIA admitted to making fake tapes and all that. So that's no reason to lend any credibility to the videotapes. In this interview, bin Laden did sort of exhibit an understanding of U.S. foreign policy. He expressed views regarding the loss of life in 9/11, said that's not something that he justifies doing, targeting civilians. So this was, again, this is a matter of public record. But so we have, again, this is a conflict here. So which is it? He denies
Well,
it. And let me just point out that the FBI's most, he was on one of FBI's most wanted list. And there are a lot of accusations about various terrorist attacks in Africa and the Middle East, but lacking on that list was these attacks on September 11th. The FBI never charged him or never accused him of being involved in those attacks officially. In fact, the spokesperson for the FBI at the time, I think his name was Rex Toombs, if I recall, said when asked about this, said we would do it, but we have no evidence of his involvement in those attacks. And that's on
Yeah,
record.
right. I know. I would say that bin Laden, to the extent this personality is real, is completely controlled. Look, they wouldn't have, done things as sophisticated as the controlled demolition of Building 7, and not had the individual they were going to try to hang this thing on under very tight control. That the idea that they just picked him out of a hat on September 11th. No, this is ridiculous. He was obviously to some extent completely controlled. Absolutely had to have been part of the op. And then the way he comes out and either resists it or not, the his death where he, the body is thrown away at sea. It was a personality. It was, he's kind of a complicated personality, and that was, I think, to make him seem a little more believable, that and that's all there is going on there is just there's a little bit of contradiction against the narrative that he would come up with just to make him seem a little more plausible and more believable. But there's no chance in my mind that they didn't have him as a controlled entity, in advance of the attack. Bin Laden's name was mentioned the day of the attack. All the news they all mentioned it. So obviously, this is if he's even real as a human being. I presume he is. I mean, he was something that's completely controlled. And so now, they bring him back, and he's in opposition to, the forces of Israel, but he's also, comes back that he's promoting Sharia law, and so, they just, as far as I'm concerned, Tim, they just, manipulate us in various ways. Some are very sophisticated, others are just crude and, over, for the public consumption who are not very alert. And I just see bin Laden as, I mean, he's someone we should always, see as part of the operation, not someone who has any kind of agency in operating, against it.
Yeah, the Osama bin Laden was an asset for the CIA and also Pakistani intelligence. He was recruited as a foreign soldier to join the fight in Afghanistan to repel the Soviet invasion in 1979. And he was a member of the Mujahideen, so-called freedom fighters. And that sort of network was established. Of course, we now know, if we believe Zbigniew Brzezinski, that the invasion itself was pr provoked by the United States in the summer of 1979 to destabilize the periphery of the Soviet Union to give it deliver its own Vietnam. That was how Brzezinski phrased it. So that conflict was provoked, and of course this became a pretext because when the Soviets invaded in December 1979, Jimmy Carter said this was a prelude to like a some further ambitions in the region, and this became a justification for the United States developing what they called a rapid reaction force. This later became CENTCOM for the U.S. to go into control that militarily set of bases there to be there to exert U.S. power really Israeli power, because as Israelis gradually took over U.S. foreign policy, it became an instrument of U.S. of really Israeli foreign policy, the sort of the Greater Israel Project and destabilizing the region. And U.S. military power has certainly been used for those purposes. But again, the CIA, you know, again, this was a Cold War era project. America saw the world and, you know, saw it in a Cold War paradigm, a dualistic way, third world nationalism, which regarded the Soviet Union sort of as a tool, another side, Western nations and other political Islam was used to sort of destabilize. They saw it as a way to destabilize those countries because it's obvious you can't get a cohesive state under, with you know, Salafist extremists running it. The but, you know, General William Odom, he was the National Security Agency. He was the director of National Security Agency under Ronald Reagan, said by any measure, the U.S. has long used terrorism. In 1978-79, the Senate was trying to pass a law against international terrorism. In every version they produced, lawyers said the U.S. would be in violation. So yeah. That's in the congressional record. During the 1970s, they used the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt as a barrier to both Soviet expansion and also prevent the spread of Marxist ideology among opposing Arab secularism, nationalism. That goes back to the 50s. So this,
yeah, the, isn't this, you know, though, like a really good template to understand the current situation in Gaza? Because,
yeah,
you know, you have a fake Islamic organization that's supposedly to balance the Muslim Brotherhood. Mm-hmm. And then somehow it gains agency and there's blowback, right?
Yeah.
Well, but then after the fact, they look at it and there are people come forward and they go, well, really, we were in control. This was, you know, there were these aspects of it that we were finding useful in creating chaos. And this is just what happened in Gaza. You know, they created Hamas. Mm-hmm. I mean, the funding of it, I think, is not contested even that it was coming from Israel. But then the claim is somehow they lost control, though there's no documentation of this. There is the claim.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the foreign policy by Hamas, which is always to just produce enough violence to justify, you know, the slave state that Israel kept Gaza in. And then, of course, you have the ludicrous bad Chuck Norris movie,
yeah,
you know, attack, and followed by the Israeli genocide. And I was looking at an article this last week, and this one guy was writing, you know, Hamas just didn't anticipate that the Israelis would be so effective militarily. Right. They couldn't have guessed that, could they have, Tim? That's impossible. But see, he has to make the claim, even though it's absurd, because otherwise people will go, well, there was no real rationale for Hamas's attack. It was just it was like demanding the genocide of the Palestinian people. Therefore, it wasn't produced by people who actually are trying to promote the interests of the Palestinians in Gaza. Just like the, you know, the European and Irish immigration policy are obviously destructive to the people. So the right, you know, the clear-minded response is these people are opposed to the interests of the people that they're claiming through their political power to be representing and trying to promote. Hamas is a controlled entity. It is just there to provide a pretext to Israel for genocide. That's it. So, God bless the Palestinian people in Gaza, and I hope that that they come to a, you know, a clear-minded understanding of the situation. Incidentally, in this light, in the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of information coming out of the Ukraine about soldiers there resisting orders. You know, mm-hmm. The Ukrainians are, and there is this meme now that the soldiers are saying that there are traitors in our midst. In other words, Zelensky and mm-hmm. The cabal that runs it. Well, I'm sorry to bring this to the attention, but there are traitors everywhere. There's traitors in Ireland and there's traitors in Gaza. And they're all working for the same team and they all have the same goal in mind, which is depopulation of the Gentile.
Well, when you have government officials going to the World Economic Forum In many cases, in violation of the law, American law, and strategizing with cosmopolitan financiers and other foreign, with no coverage, no exposure or criticism, what they're saying, what they're reporting, and having those forums design policy, evidently. Well, that, we have a big problem. And they've openly said, like the Walberg scion back in 1947 said, we'll have world government whether through consent or force. And he's saying that to the Senate. It's like, oh, okay. And so what passport do you have? No, but they see themselves as cosmopolitan above it all, and so that's why you have situations like in Ireland where the government simply does not even give the pretext of representing the people and even enforcing the law anymore, representing the people. And the same thing in the United States, we have a big problem of representation. The biggest problem again is the fact that the government's taken over by foreign cosmopolitan interests, have no regard for the heritage American. In fact, it is antipathy towards it and seeks to destroy it because that heritage America, for whatever it was a stumbling block to sort of cosmopolitan globalism.
Of course.
And who are the rootless cosmopolitans? So, but yeah, I mean, just something like the legend, and the word legend is important of Bin Laden, because there's competing legends, just like there's competing narratives, which are just simply contradict each other. So, which one is true? I mean, is his denial? That's not denied. His denial isn't denied. The end of this letter. Well, these letters contradict each other. So.
Yeah, but I mean, just think about the pattern here, the context. I
But
mean,
right, a
think
terrorist
about,
isn't going to deny doing it. I mean, he's not trying. He's
well,
not confessing his
exactly.
innocence.
I mean, think about the EU bureaucrats in Ireland. Think about the bureaucrats in Hamas that ordered the attack. Think about the bureaucrats in the Ukraine that are demanding that the Ukrainians walk into automatic weapon fire and all get slaughtered. It's all the same process over and over and over again. They gain political control, and then they use the political control for destruction. And to camouflage it, they have these fancy concepts, which are, intimidating about inclusion or whatever. But it's always the end result is just depopulation, deracination, and diminishing of in every aspect of life,
Well, how is it inclusive to get stabbed in front of your school? How is that tolerant and inclusive? Just like they
Well,
talk
but
about like
Tim,
rules-based order,
yeah,
global
but
order,
remember,
and then
this event
how is it
happened.
following the rules-based order when they blow up the Nord Stream pipeline? What rule were they following there?
Yeah, where's the rule there?
I mean.
But remember, is really what you want is broad stroke here. You want to say, okay, well, we've had this immigration into Ireland, and what did we get? What is the increase in violent crimes? And not just in the single instance, but let's look at it in a broad scale. They can't have this discussion, Tim. This discussion will not happen because the actual reality is horrific. That the effect of the immigration has been completely destructive, and the only rational response for the Irish people is mass expulsions. That is it. They need to just create criteria that will load the boats with people that are destructive to the
Well,
Irish.
that's violent. Well, you created those conditions when you brought people in violation of the interest of the Irish state, the Irish people. In many cases, it was Irish law. They just did it, and to the extent that they didn't bother to change the law. So these are the conditions that you made inevitable. And then you're going to blame the people for having extremist right wing ideology for protesting children being stabbed to
Well,
death.
that's how they'll call. That's how they define it. They'll define it as extremist right wing. They're just using
Well, I'm
bamboozling.
sorry, it may be extreme, but a moderate response isn't going to solve the problem at this point, is it? And who created that situation?
Yeah, and there is some life. I mean, the so-called far right, they use that expression, is gaining traction everywhere in Europe because the effects of the immigration policy of the EU are becoming just too visible to ignore. And people are starting to realize the same thing that the Ukrainian foot soldiers are realizing. There are traitors in our midst. They lie. They lie about who they are, what they represent, what their motivations are. They lie. you can't engage them in that kind of like stupid discussion. You have to just say they're traitors. Mm-hmm. They're evil. They always lie. When people are treasonous, they have to lie. They can never tell the truth. The public has to accept that they need the kind of the internal fortitude to just say, we don't even want to have your nonsensical bamboozling discussion. Mm-hmm. We just have to identify you as a traitor. We have to remove you from political office, and we have to expel the people that you brought here to our country just for the destruction of our nation.
Yeah. Why are they there? I mean, I go to Ireland. How was your trip to Ireland? Oh, I got mugged by some guy from Ghana.
Well, the cities like Dublin is just a cesspool. Yes. You know, I haven't been there in years, but that's what I've been told.
And by the way, all these immigrants have cell phones. They have welfare. Yeah. And the youth within a few days start to adapt. And they're like your typical youths you see in America and in England, where they're engaged in all sorts of violent hijinks. You know, they're not feeling oppressed. They don't feel grateful, and they're not feeling oppressed.
Who's picking up the hotel bill?
Yes.
Do any of them have a credit card? If they do, where does it come from?
When you follow the money, that's inherently anti-Semitic, because that's an anti-Semitic trope.
Oh, there it is. We can't talk about that. It's just like it's magic that they can come here and have the resources both to arrive and then to like live without a job, right? Mm-hmm. And so they have nothing but free time to be on the streets and pollute the culture, yes. Drive us out of our country. You know, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's ethnic warfare and demographic warfare. Oh, it is.
Of course it is. That's exactly what it is. That's why they were brought in.
And they tell the men, let your women get raped. In fact, it is in Sweden where women were told to redefine sexual assault and rape because it was so common. They had to rethink it so that they're not reporting it all the time. See, it's not an objective fact that it's happening. It's the fact that if you don't report it, then they can pretend that it's not happening.
Yeah, and it's just amazing that you have the, you know, common European on the street, that there are still some of them that are actually not seeing the reality of the immigration policy as evil and as being promoted by traitors.
That's not inclusive, Joe. You're not being inclusive.
Well,
you have to have your priorities straight.
right. I mean, now we're back to Harvard and the Unabomber. You know, they need to like reprogram these people because they've got the wrong thoughts. You know,
get the wrong. That's why you need, obviously, when people are expressing their dislike for having the children and women and children murdered on the street, and you express hate, meaning your anger, which is interpreted as hate, you have to have stricter hate laws to prevent people from expressing their anger over that. Then that solves the problem.
You need to redefine a knife assault. Mm-hmm. You know, there has to be some you know way that it can be promoted as part of like, well, the individual was under high stress because of the racist environment, and and so this is just to be expected in the transition to a more multicultural world, that there'll be a little bit of
it's inevitable. According to Barbara Leonard Spector, that Jews are going to be key to this, changing Europe, the face of Europe, doing away with the ethnic European state. And it's going to be, Jews will be key to this, and there'll be a lot of resentment towards it. But it's just inevitable.
Oh, yeah, it is. And I mean, is she working in Israel to help with the, the multicultural inclusion there?
Yeah. And so what's also inevitable is passing stricter and stricter hate crime laws or hate speech laws, which prevents you from expressing your dissatisfaction with the current state of affairs. So when you see these national conferences and countering anti-Semitism, hate and ADL, and reports of anti-Semitism going off the charts, and the suppression of free speech in Harvard University, it's all part of that same agenda.
Sure. So absolutely. So I would just say in general, their position is weak in many ways. I mean, they have a lot of power in terms of intimidation and financing, but man, there is an erosion of the capacity for the bamboozlement to work.
Well, you don't have the truth.
Yes.
And how many billions? You can pay people to say things, but they never really believe it.
Right.
So, I mean, so how many shekels, how many billions do you have to throw at that? And again, bottom,
Exactly.
diminishing
So what
return.
they don't really have faith and belief, I think, in the general public now. There a lot of them are just too stupefied to have any opinions at all. But the ones whose minds are activated, at best they have intimidation. They have them afraid to discuss that the, you know, like, well, you know, the multicultural world doesn't seem to be, you know, producing anything other than chaos and destruction. And, you know, or gee, it seems like a lot of you know, the Jews in America organize in a very self-centered way, and they seem to have an undemocratic amount of political power. I sure would like to know, you know, how we could have a kind of a counterbalance to that. You know, I mean, we are the majority, and it doesn't seem like we have a lot of political power in many ways. You know, and but moreover, to you know, to expose our political class. You know, people like, I mean, they're really, you know, disgusting and obvious traitors, like Lindsey Graham. You know, he would be one. You know, Christie. You know, the ones that are just animated, Mitt Romney. But even going further down, I think that there is, you know, kind of a you know, a treasonous cohort, you know, that stands ready to always to stand up against anyone who complains against, well, for example, like the genocide in Gaza. You know, you get these
Well,
people
yeah.
who stand up, and you know, you hear their speeches in Congress where they, you know, the problem is anti-Semitism, the problem is the attack on the poorer Israelis, and the actual historical process for the last 100 years, the actual genocide of thousands and thousands of Palestinians, it doesn't even exist. It's not even a, you know, these are like, you can't even bring them up as concepts.
Well, all of a sudden, and for no reason at all, right? That's the let's say, well, why are people doing this? Just for no reason at all, Hamas attack.
Just no reason at all.
So,
Just no
okay,
reason
Joe.
at all. All right, brother. Well, anyway, thanks for the discussion. We'll get them next week, okay?
Enjoy the week. Bye bye.
You too. Bye-bye.